ecological dynamics. And so you'll hear a lot of that in the sports psychology world. And it's about the underlying theory that coaching is not so much about instruction. It's more about you being a designer of a learning environment.
Hello there, Tristan White here, and welcome to episode 112 of the Think Big, Act Small podcast. Today, in this episode 112, we are exploring the world of coaching. Now, it's been a long while since we've had an interview episode here on the Think Big, Act Small podcast, but today's the day. We've got a wonderful guest. His name is Rhett McLennan. He's a professional sports coach. He's the head coach of Gippsland Power in the Coates Talent League, which is a feeder league to the AFL, Australian Rules Football, that is. And Rhett and I have known each other for quite a few years. We used to work together. I was the chair of the board of Prom Country Aged Care, a not-for-profit aged care facility here in my hometown of Foster, and Rhett was the CEO. And so effectively, we worked very closely together. He would report to me, I guess, is the formal way of talking about it, but we worked as a team. And you'll hear us allude to that a few times throughout the conversation. More important than my relationship with Rhett is the wonderful experience that he's got. Firstly, as a practitioner, he was a health practitioner in the early part of his career. He was then in leadership and management in the health world. And then he's moved on to being a full-time professional coach in a sporting environment. He is obsessed by this learning, growing, helping others to achieve. If you'd like to connect with Rhett, LinkedIn is the best place to find him. I'll put the link in the show notes. But I'd really love you to consider some of the wonderful learnings from Rhett, including things like coach trends, not events. Let me say that again. Coach trends, not events, is a really powerful learning. There's also connection before correction is my language. He's got his own way of creating connection with team members. And I really encourage you to listen right to the end of the episode for Rhett's tip on dealing with imposter syndrome and how, based on his experience and his learnings, your very own personal talent stack, best tool you've got to long-term success. I think you're going to love this. Zoom out, consider all the options, how it could apply to you at work, at home, in all sorts of places. But here is the interview with Rhett McLennan. Enjoy. Rhett McLennan, welcome to the Think Big, Act Small podcast. Excited to be here with you. How are you?
I'm great. Tristan, yourself?
Yeah, really well, Rhett. Really well. Thank you. Looking forward to having a chat with you. And let's get straight into it, Rhett. Here's a pretty broad question for you. Who is Rhett McLennan?
Yeah, I'm 45-year-old football coach, AFL football coach. I live in Leongatha in country Victoria. I have two kids, a daughter who's 18, currently going through year 12 exams at the moment. So stressful household at the moment, but she's doing as well as she can. She's giving it her best shot. I've got a son who's 16 years old, and I've got a wife. We've been married for 21 years. We've lived here in country Victoria and for now, the best part of 13 years. Yeah, we love it. A great part of the country, and it's nice and quiet, and there's good, really strong community connections, and yeah, it's good fun.
Excellent, Rhett. And not always from Victoria, though. You're born and raised somewhere else, I reckon, Rhett, weren't you?
Yeah, so I've done the opposite move of what most people do. So I grew up on the Sunshine Coast. So originally from the Mallee, we had a farm, and then we sold our farm sort of the drought of the mid-80s, and then we moved up to beautiful Mooloolaba and Maroochydore around that area, and went to high school there. And then the love of Australian football never waned for me. So by the time that I'd finished high school, I'd had, I suppose, an element of aptitude for the game. So was recruited to come down to Melbourne and trial at an AFL club, and then plied my trade while I went to university at VFL level. Yeah, so that's how I ended up back down in the southern states in the heartland of AFL.
Of AFL, yeah, got it, Rhett, got it. So Rhett, I'm keen to hear plenty about this professional journey of yours and all the experience you've learned as a coach in various places. But give us a short summary of tell us about your current job and how you found your way there.
Yeah, so I'm currently the head coach at Gippsland Power Football Club, which plays in the Coates Talent League, which is, I suppose, the main feeder club, feeder league into the AFL. And I've been in that role for 5 years, so I'm contracted on next year as well, so which will be my sixth. And before that, my full-time job was as a CEO, and I was a CEO of an aged care facility in South Gippsland in Foster, which you know very well. And before that, I was a CEO also at a primary healthcare organisation in Inverloch. So I was in health management for the best part of 15 years after leaving university as an exercise physiologist. And I also had a degree in biomedical science. So I quickly found out that being a practitioner was great, but what I really loved to do was actually be around people and be part of teams, which was what I did as my part-time job as a sort of semi-professional footballer. So if I could mold that together, I'd have more fun at work and hopefully be more productive. And so did that. I was a playing assistant coach as a footballer for 13 years. And then with the opportunity came to apply to be a full-time coach, I jumped at it, and hence where I am now.
Yeah, got it, Rhett. So, Rhett, I think we should fill the listeners into to how we know each other, and that is that Prom Country Aged Care is a residential aged care facility in Foster, my hometown, and I've been involved in that organisation for a long time, and you were the CEO of Prom Country Aged Care immediately before you became the head coach of Gippsland Power. Is the chronology there? I think, is that the right term? You think, Rhett? Chronology, is that right?
Sounds good to me. Match made in heaven.
Yeah, you got it. That's it. So that's it. That's how Rhett and I crossed paths. But Liam Gather is just up the road from Foster, and an interest in leadership, in coaching, and developing both ourselves and the people around us, I think, is some common ground that that Rhett and I have got. That we'd I'm pretty keen to jump in and learn from you, Rhett. So Rhett, on that professional journey, which has involved sport, it's involved health, it's involved coaching. Look, if you had to answer the question that says, what's been the most useful leadership moment for you? Or what would you say in any sort of moments that really, really stick in your mind?
Yeah, there was one. And I think you were part of it indirectly. It was at Prom Country Aged Care. We had a gastro outbreak that went for 3 weeks.
I remember this.
We had a gastro outbreak that went for 3 weeks and was just after Christmas into the new year. So in regards to having sort of a biohazard thing within an aged care facility where it was literally life and death, and having it at around that holiday period where everybody was away was very, very stressful, and it really tested my leadership skills, but also my reliance on our team. It was such a moment that was so proud of the people that I worked with and how we actually got our way out of it, because we had so many people on holidays, so many services on skeleton staff to get out of that 21 days with no one losing their life. I thought it was just a magnificent effort, and just it really showed how strong our culture was for everybody to actually dig in and work for a greater cause. And so I have things and situations now where I'm part of a very passionate industry where especially football for some people is life, and it's such a passionate thing. For me, that three-week period really puts things into perspective when you go, well, it wasn't like it was life or death like it was for us for 21 days at PCAC at that time. So that gives me a lot of perspective when I'm thinking about whether I move little Johnny to full back or full forward.
Brett, thank you. It's that was early on in your career as a CEO at Prom Country Aged Care. Is my memory. It was in the earlier parts, and it required all hands on deck, and it required some very good communication and leadership skills, and the result spoke for itself. So, Brett, thanks for sharing that. That is impressive, and I think context I'm not sure what the right term is, but just having a reference point is really powerful for us as we move forward. So thank you. Let's hope we never have to deal with one of those again.
Yes.
All righty. Rhett, I'm really keen for understand more about your coaching. In context for me is that coaching for service-based business leaders is a really important concept, but remembering that many service-based business owners who are listening to this podcast, practitioners and technicians by my background and by training, and moving into becoming a coach by default without necessarily having the training and understanding what coaching is where many of us find ourselves. And learning from people that have been coached, are coaching others, are now coaching coaches, and really understand the industry is such a powerful opportunity we've got. So let's start from the start, Reg. What is coaching?
there's a really good theory that I kind of attach my philosophy to, which is ecological dynamics. And so you'll hear a lot of that in the sports psychology world. And it's about the underlying theory that coaching is not so much about instruction. It's more about you being a designer of a learning environment. And I think that goes across all sectors. So that's not just sport, but that's anything you do where you're actually trying to lead a team. So if you can design an environment where people come into it and they see to be part of what you're doing as something that they want to aspire to do and believe in it strongly, if you're creating that environment where they have to grow and they have to learn to continue on and to be part of the group, kind of that Maslow hierarchy of needs thing of being part of something but also being useful in that part of something, then I think that's a big part of how you become a really strong coach, is just creating the environment so that learning is just something people do and they pop on their shoes and they go to work every day.
Right. That's design a learning environment and then be a useful part of something when you're in that environment is sort of the summary that I picked up from your answer there, Red. And that's very different to what I was expecting you to say, by the way. So it's I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting you to talk about designing a learning environment. And so I'm wrapped to get right into the nitty gritty of what is coaching. And so following up from that, Red, who is a coach?
I think a coach is somebody, and you really touched on something that most people have as their journey to become a coach, is they're usually a participant and they're usually somebody who has a passion for it. And then they find themselves still emotionally tied to it. So to continue on, they become a coach or they become a leader. And what usually happens in that space is that you need to kind of let go of yourself and then start having joy and start having the reason that you're doing things to have the joy and have the reward actually fall onto others. And if you're a coach that actually does that, then you're probably in there for the right reasons. You're in there to help. You're in there to place people higher and get them to get the maximum reward while you sit in the background and try and assist them any way, shape or form that you can. So that would be my description of what a coach or what an effective coach ideals should be.
And Rhett, there's coaches with a title, like your job title is head coach of the Gippsland Power. And then there are assistant coaches, and then there are coaches within an organization. You might get a job as a coach in terms of your leadership responsibility. And then, Rhett, it goes all the way to the participants in your teams, AFL footy teams. I expect your team members to coach each other on the field. And I expect that the players are expected to coach themselves as well. Okay, you've got many levels on this coaching concept, I think. Red, is that right?
Yeah, there is. So it's about how you promote it, how you get out of your own way to make sure that it has enough space to actually do that themselves, and how you just kind of find the most elegant ways to tinker with it without overbearing those other people within your team to do that and to shine a light on those people that are actually out there really trying to help and assist other people. If you're doing that and you're just coming in and either praising, catching them doing something right, or placing a hand on their shoulder and just giving them some hints and tips or asking the right kind of questions, then that's where you think that kind of level five could be great trope kind of comes from, is that give people space to actually do their own kind of coaching and their own kind of helping, put their own personality on it.
Red, this is interesting. I want to dig deep into that. You mentioned Jim Collins, good to great. There's level five leaders is the hierarchy of the best leaders are level five leaders. And if people aren't familiar with that, I really encourage you to research what is a level five leader according to Jim Collins. But Red, what I'm hearing is don't overdo it. Don't try and coach every moment and every instruction and overcomplicate things. Is that a really important starting point for anyone who's early in their coaching journey?
Absolutely. Something to think about is coach trends, not events. So you can have certain situations where something goes wrong, but that is usually the greatest learning tool you can have. So you need to sit and observe and wait to see what happens in response. Because if you keep stymieing the ability to stop everything and recorrect, then no momentum gets gathered and then everything starts to rely a little bit on you. So if you can actually have a look at trends more than events, as in, okay, well, this seems to be a common thread and we don't think they're getting anywhere, so let's stop, take a breath and review it, ask the kind of questions, provide your input, provide your expertise. But if you see progression from mistakes, then your best bet to actually get that sustainable improvement is to actually give it some space and then encourage the process of, hey, I see how this has actually progressed. This is getting better. We really think that this is going to get somewhere, even if you may not think it's going to. So keep on that right path, keep that enthusiasm going, keep doing what you're doing because you're going to get there. We see it.
Rhett, coach trends, not events. I think we can stop the recording right now. We've all got something that's amazingly powerful in that. So thank you. I think that's useful. And I want to stress test that a little bit with you though, Rhett, and know, because your full-time job, head coach of Gippsland Power, is some talented junior or youth athletes who are working their way towards, some of them will become professional athletes, not all of them. Many of them have got aspirations to become professional athletes. And so there's a level of competence that already exists in that group of people that you're coaching. How do we both go down the ladder, so to speak, in people that are more inexperienced in their career? Let's start there. I also want to ask the same question as to what happens when people are more advanced in their progression. But that allowing space and coaching trends, not events. How do we unwind that to almost a raw beginner that we're coaching? Because I think the challenge there is to almost, if we're talking sports, it's almost to coach every possession or every step on the field, and that's when it becomes very confusing and overcoach for people on the field, I think.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things I think we need to think about in coaching is the first thing you want to do is connect with your players or your staff or your team, and that's connect with them individually. Connect with them as a team. And then as soon as you've actually done that, then you can start to think about how you help them. But it's very difficult to actually try and provide advice if you haven't got that connection. So the old classic one is they don't care what you know until they know that you care. No matter what level that is, that rings so true from my experience. So I think it's really important that we get that connection first and still keep the trend over events thing happening. So if somebody sees that connection and they're having fun and we want to keep the momentum of sessions or training or the activities going, it might be just a little whisper in their ear about something you just want to correct, because you'll see if they're drowning. Because if they are drowning, then you can pull people aside and say, okay, you and I just work on this for 30 seconds. Let the other guys go, you and I are going to work on that. That creates more of a connection. You provide that help and it doesn't slow everyone else down. Because that's the hardest thing about coaching and being involved in leading teams, is that how hard is it to actually keep all the group involved and stretching some of those higher achievers while still addressing some of the people at the bottom of the group. And that happens at every level. So it's about how we actually keep the momentum of the group going while we actually just quickly grab those people that we think are falling behind and how we try and get them to come back. And that's more about that one-on-one connection. How do we help this person here?
Rhett, in the leadership culture material that I coach some service-based business leaders on, we talk about connection before correction. Is the language that we use, and I think it's the same concept that you're talking there. That we have to connect one on one before we can provide correction or improvements. We can try correction before connection, but the likelihood of success is much lower in my experience. Same for you?
Yeah, totally agree. So I think of it really similar, just different language. Think about three steps of connection, help, and stretch. So we can't do any of those without that order.
Got it. So, Rhett, most of this coaching experience that we're talking about now is about coaching athletes and participants in a team. But I suspect that you've, in previous jobs, you've had direct reports and people that work in organizations. And similarly, I suspect now you've got people that are assistant coaches and other members of the organization at Gippsland Power that report to you that aren't necessarily athletes, but there's a leadership job and a coaching job required in those things. And so is there anything that you would say that is a really powerful thing you can take from the field to the office, if you like? Any things that and do all these things apply? Am I just sort of asking you to repeat yourself, or is there some different things that we can apply in different environments?
No, one thing I'll add to the process, and at the risk of embarrassing you, Tristan, it's actually something I learned from you, which was the rhythm of communication. No matter if it's a player or if it's a coach or if it's a staff member, it's just so important. Usually when relationships break down, it's usually through lack of communication. Even if you feel like that hasn't been the case, it's usually the excuse from another party. So how do you keep a rhythm of communication going, but how do you make it genuine as well? So I've stumbled on the beauty of voice recordings. So it's not something I use all the time and for meaningful conversations, but if I'm thinking from a week-to-week proposition, I've got to talk to 23 selected players, another 20 that haven't been selected. I've got another 10 coaches, and I've got medical staff, and I've got administration staff. So it ends up being around about 60, 70 communication lines that I need. And because we're actually not often training anywhere near as much as other clubs because of the distance between our regions, we mainly only get one training session, so 2 hours, where we actually have contact time. So how do I actually get that information out? And so I can send a text message, pretty impersonal, you can misconstrue that. So just the idea of actually having that little blue with a little line button next to your phone and putting in a little message of 45 seconds to a 90-second conversation about, hey, was thinking about you, I saw you today, sorry I didn't get a chance to have a yak to you, but really thanks for the physio work that you did on Player X. I saw the amount of care that you gave. You said it was awesome, mate. If there's anything you need, any kind of information we need to follow up with, just give me a buzz and we'll talk about it. So if you have those conversations, then people can actually say, okay, well, there's been information here. And it helped my communication with a large team so much by just people hearing my voice and understanding that the conversations I was having was with a place of authenticity from my respect. Because people can, if you don't hear from someone, you can really misconstrue what their actions are if you don't get a chance to actually speak to them. That's my experience. And that's been really helpful. And it's something that you are fantastic at, and it's something I've taken from our working relationship in previous life.
You say the nicest things, Rhett. I'm staring at you, but I think rhythm of communication is critical. And I think there's so many people listening to this podcast who have probably got teams of part-time team members, part-time employees who they may not have a whole lot of face time with. And so understanding that there are ways to communicate and do it in a as personal way as possible by using technology like voice messages that you're using there, Rhett. So I think there's plenty to learn from that. And the rhythm of communication that you and I had when we worked together was every Thursday afternoon. We had a set time that we would allocate, and most Thursday afternoons you would call me and we would speak on the phone with a relatively set agenda. It could have got boring, but if we give our full selves, we make sure that we connect appropriately. And I think that's a learning as well, that same time, same place, same agenda, but bring your full human self to the conversation. I think that's a tip that will hopefully useful for others as well. So thank you, Rhett. That is useful. I want to push on, Rhett, and understand about the different levels of competence, I think is probably the right word to use here. And what I'm saying is that you coach an elite junior underage football team. You've also been involved in levels of AFL football higher than that, significantly higher than that. You've coached representative teams. And so I'll quickly summarize and say that you've the Gippsland Power team that you coach week to week exists, and then a small number of them would be selected to head off to play for Victoria Country. And you've been one of the coaches for Victoria Country. And then a small number of people that are involved in the carnival where the country kids play then get selected to head off to an academy program that is the junior pathway that I understand, and you've also been involved in the senior pathway of coaching and learning at the Hawthorn Football Club in terms of senior AFL footy, and you've been in all those levels. My question is, what do you notice about working with athletes at different levels of competence in their pathway? Is any, I think trends is probably the right word to ask you about there, Rhett. And if I didn't quite describe that well enough, the pathway, please feel free to correct me.
No, that's fairly well summarized. I will actually say something that's probably going to be a surprise to the listeners is that the higher the standard, the higher level of childlike enthusiasm there is. So it seems like they're having genuine fun at AFL level. And then if you watch Nationals under 18 level, so Australian under 18s level or Vic Country under 18s and even our level, you see a level of fun and smiles that probably, I think, may not have expected. And I think it's probably because of, you know, we think of coaches as with a whistle in their hand and yelling and shouting. So you got to be tougher, you got to be harder, you got to be stronger. And the only thing I want you to do is grit your teeth and grimace when you're training, because that means that you're giving it your all. Gone are those days. There's enough positive psychology and research out there to actually show that the more teeth you can see in a smile, then the more they're actually probably taking things in and the more that you're actually really engrossed in what you're doing and providing really good deliberate practice. So that's the interesting thing, the higher you go. And then the lower you go, that's probably an element of self-consciousness, a little bit of imposter syndrome with some people. Geez, I don't think I'm good enough here. And so that's where the skill actually comes in. So it's a little bit true is that the higher you go, some of the really tough parts of coaching are kind of taken out because you've got really motivated people. They want to be there. There's an element of skill and ability. The only thing that really increases is that your accountability or your scrutiny actually increases a little bit. But I've been lucky enough to coach our girls as well during COVID years. And so our girls programming in Gippsland, to be really nice, isn't very strong. And at times we don't have a lot of participants because netball and basketball are really strong sports and they kind of take over. And so our level of depth isn't all that good. But the lessons I learnt by coaching our girls team for those 2 years were just enormous in regards to how important it is to actually have those connections. We're really lucky in sport and football in that we get the added benefit of endorphins to keep people engaged. So there's that little bit of a neurochemical hit. But everyone can kind of use dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin as kind of connectors to each other in the way that you program your training. And I think the way that you actually program your talking and your training should be based around how many neurochemical hits can you actually give people? How many times can you make them laugh? How many times can you get them to connect to each other? How many times can you actually get them finishing their session with a smile on their face and thinking when they get into the car and they're seeing their mum and dad, they go, "How was training?" They go, "Oh, we had a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it. It was tough, but we want to come back again." And it's about putting some intentionality into those interactions so that you keep getting people coming back and enjoying what they're doing.
Got it. So, Rhett, for service-based business owners who might be listening to this conversation and they've got a building a team and they've got a team and they're building it, doing their best to build a strong culture, but there's some real battles at times with connecting with team members, improving the performance of team members, and probably continuing the progress to build a high-performing team in their business. I think what I'm hearing from this conversation is the higher you get, the more fun we can have, and the more fun that you've got in your team, the more you should connect with those folk and try and fine tune and enhance the amount of fun and connection happening at the highest level, as opposed to getting, dare I say, it stuck in the weeds of the challenges at the lower end. Is that a reasonable summary, you reckon, Rhett?
Absolutely, it is. So when you've got a team that's functioning really well, it's a little bit like a flywheel. You're really just sort of tinkering at the edges just to make sure it's staying on the right track. When you're stuck, that's when you really need to work on those relationships and make sure they're right, so that you're understanding that everybody's pulling in the same direction and your culture's aligned. Once that culture's aligned, then we can start working on how do we help our staff, how do we help our team,
And how do we get those results that we need to get? And usually it's not around the results that are actually out of our control a little bit. So it's not so much. So when we look at a game plan for football, our ultimate goal is to win on the scoreboard. But our key performance indicators have nothing to do with things that involve chance. It's not making sure we kick more goals than points, making sure we kick more goals than them. It's about what kind of efforts can we do? How many effective tackles can we lay? How many times can we actually empty out our, I'm going into the weeds of football, but things that actually just involve effort. And if we hit those effort factors, then we know that we're on the right track and we know that everyone's pulling in the same direction. If our KPIs are that, then invariably we win. And that's how we actually sell that to our players, is that we hit our effort stats. We're playing the game that we want to play. It's played on our terms. The coaches will be really proud of you. And if the scoreboard suggests that we won at the end of the day, then fantastic. But that's just a bonus because you've played for instructions and we're really proud of you for what you've done in that space. So I think that's how you actually start moving forward when you're in that really sticky situation as a business.
Yeah, I understand. Rhett, thank you. That is really, really a great way of thinking of it. And I think there's another element that I just want to add in here for those service-based business owners who might be battling with some coaching challenges at now or in the past or in the future. Courage is really important as a coach as well. We have to be brave enough to lean in and to connect and make decisions. We don't have to repeat ourselves forever and not make changes about who is in the team and who's not in the team. And Rhett, I'm about to ask you about a question about what is one of the most toughest part of coaching, and I might have opened the door to the answer there. I'm not sure whether I did or not, but being the as a owner of a service based business, you are the head coach, and you get to decide who's in your team. You are also head of selection. Rhett, I believe you'd be head of selection in your team, and the owners of the business are the head of selection in their team. And we do not have to accept the person who is not bringing the effort that we need and want in our teams. And so, Rhett, my question is, what's the toughest part of coaching? But if you want to add anything to what I mentioned there, then feel free to jump in. But otherwise, what's the toughest part of coaching?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. It's how do you impart bad news for people? How do you deselect people? How do you help them deal with injury and all the bad parts of actually disappointing somebody? And it mightn't necessarily be something that they've done at times. It might be just that there's somebody better behind them. And so it's about how you have that good, strong chain of communication so they're aware. That helps you actually provide that final conversation that might be able to say, hey, I'm sorry, but this isn't going to work out for you this week. You're going to have a rest this week, or we need you to go back and play locally, which is our conversations. But what helps you with that conversation is the pre-conversations that you have. So either whether that's on those voice recordings, like we said, this is what we want you to do this week. And then when you go to those conversations, say, remember when we had a chat about this is what we needed you to do? And in our summary, you didn't quite hit those marks. So therefore, you're going to miss out this week. So making sure those communication lines are always strong and consistent will actually help you with those really tricky situations where you actually have to bite the bullet and have those tough conversations with people.
Got it. So the people conversations are definitely the hardest ones by the sound of things, Rhett. And I think investing in relationships so you can deal with the tough times is a critical part of it. And to zoom out a little while, even wider, we invest in our team culture so that we can be connected to deal with the ups and downs and inevitably the downs that are going to happen in our businesses as well. So I think there's lots to draw there from those one-to-one connections you have to build to then be able to deal with the tough conversations, Rhett, to zoom out to culture as well. And speaking of culture, Rhett, I'm interested in the culture in your footy club because you've got an ongoing Gippsland Power culture, I expect, but then you've got a team culture that changes with, I'm guessing, half or more of the team changes every year. And so how do you go about establishing an ongoing culture at Gippsland Power? And then how do you go about building a team culture when the seats are rotating so often?
Yeah, so it is an interesting scenario in that we don't have many players for more than 2 years. Some we only have for one. And, you know, so it's how do we actually develop a culture when people are only sort of sliding in and sliding out of the club? And the really important one that we base our emphasis on, and so like a lot of businesses, So we'll talk about our character traits of what we want to bring to our club, and we get our team to decide that. So, for instance, this year was a little bit unique, is that I had an opposition coach have a chat to me at the end of the year, and he was telling me that he was thinking about how he strategically looked at next year, and he was saying that he was talking to a colleague of his at his club, and they were saying whenever they think about how they want to improve as a club, they think about what Gippsland Power do. You know, they're proud to wear the jumper, they're hard at the contest, they're genuinely connected to each other. They have no excuses because they have to travel or they can't train as much. So when we think about how we can be better, we always ask ourselves how Gippsland Power do it. And so that was our story that we had on signs put up around the club. And so from that, we actually had some keywords taken out of that. So every week we'd give a hard award, a connected award, a no excuses award, a proud award, and a better award. And it didn't necessarily go to the best players. It went to the people that exhibited those kind of keyword behaviors. So a lot of times that we had the connected award, it was given to a player that we saw picking up rubbish, or we gave it to a player who we saw get three drinks of water, one for him and two for his teammates. Just little things like that that help promote the behavior that actually creates a really good teammate and creates somebody that makes the club really comfortable to be in. So I think that's really important, especially when you're going to a representative environment like ours is that people come in here and go, there's people from all over Gippsland. It's not just my club. It's not just my area that I drive in or know. It's somewhere completely different. What are the people going to be like? If we keep promoting those people who are doing some really high character trait things and showing examples within our four walls, then that creates a really, really comfortable environment for not only our players to be in, but our staff to be in as well. So that's how we kind of promote that consistent culture within our club.
And Red, what I like about that is that it's completely accessible. Like anyone can get some drinks for their mates, or anyone can pick up some rubbish, or like it's not, there's no way I can compete with that kid who is a foot taller than me and runs much faster than me and is a much better footballer because he's 18 months older than me. It is, I can live these behavioral habits, which may be part of a set of core values or the like, which you make it clear what's expected, and then you reward people that are doing it, and they're completely accessible behaviors. And I suspect you mentioned seeing people's teeth before, Rhett, by seeing their smiles. I suspect that when you pick someone out to give them these awards, you see plenty of smiles with that sort of stuff, Rhett, do you?
Yeah, you do. And it's sort of one of those things that what's happened because we've consistently given these awards year after year is that the congratulations that the team gives this person when they're actually given these awards, like it's a lolly, like it's not a princely prize, but it's recognition that it's the kind of behavior that we love and that your teammates love as well. And so we'll at times say that I'm not going to pick the ones this week, but we might have a couple of injured players that are always inside when we're training and they feel a little bit isolated. So say, okay, can you pick from tonight the connected award and the hard award tonight, and then get out in front of the group and tell the group why you picked those two players. We do that consistently as well. So it's not just, you're not just hearing from me, you're hearing from your players as well. So I think that's important as well, because you don't want to just feel like it's a didactic thing from a coach. You want that leadership to come from all different corners of your organization, and by giving people space to get into that space and help provide recognition, that helps promote leaders, and it gives you a bit of an understanding of how you can promote within from within as well.
Most important job of a leader is to create more leaders, Rhett. That's my belief, and I think that the way you create more leaders is to give people opportunity and give them jobs to do and let them step into that space, which is exactly what you're asking there, which is excellent. Hey, Rhett. We've seen so far I'm looking at you on the screen, and we've been chatting for 40 odd minutes. And we've heard plenty about Red's experience and coaching, and there's plenty of really powerful and strong messages in there. But I know Rhett McLennan is a joker from way back, and I know he likes to dress up, and I know there's plenty of energy about Rhett McLennan. And so How do you blend the serious coach that is Rhett McLennan and the fella who likes to bring plenty of fun to life and to your team, Rhett? How do you blend that stuff?
You know, I think it's really important for a leader to actually, and you'll hear this, I'm sure, from a lot of your guests, is to be authentic and be yourself. So we do a couple of things as a group. So before every game, to help people calm down, I tell a really bad joke, and that's before I go into pre-coach addresses. And then after every training session, we have our group that is split up into different tribes. And so we have like a party game at the end of every training session. So it might be noughts and crosses, but you have to do it in shuttle runs, or it might be who can hold a handstand for the longest, or who can hold a piece of paper against the wall by blowing it for the longest period of time. So anything to kind of just make people smile and make people laugh. And then when they win, everyone jumps up and down and says fantastic and pats each other on the back. That's what made such an emotional connection for me for football, for footballer clubs. So yeah, I love to play the game. The fabric of the club in a community is kind of such an intangible thing that is such an important part of my life. I want to actually convey that onto other people. And if we can just set up little different things so that we can actually have people feeling the same way, then hopefully we've actually got those leaders, those future leaders, actually starting their journey of, God, is this about knowing a little bit about football and making sure everyone's connected? I can do that. So, you know, hopefully it helps break down those barriers. It's not as tricky as what you think it is, guys. It's about how much you love it and how much you can actually instill that passion in other people.
Yeah, got really great story, Rhett. And I couldn't help but thinking that it's a bit like inviting people into your house and making sure they're connected and they've got a drink and they've got someone to chat to or someone to have a bit of a smile to and all that sort of stuff. There's many ways we can think about this, but connection first, fun, and then we can get the work done if we've got those two things happening inside the team is what I'm hearing there, Rhett. So I like it. Rhett, we're getting close to the end there. I've got a couple more questions for you. And one's about your personal lifestyle, Rhett. And what I mean by lifestyle is that you are a leader. You have been a leader for a long time. It can be a stressful job that you've got. And I remember that time when you were dealing through that 3-week challenge as a CEO with a gastro outbreak in a nursing home. It was a pretty stressful time, Rhett. But us leaders need to have a sustainable lifestyle which allows us to keep going and keep doing what we're doing. And so how do you optimize your life, Rhett, to be able to sleep at night, get on with the job tomorrow and not get burnt out, I suppose, is the ultimate question.
Yeah. So as you know, Tristan, I'm a fitness fanatic, and I think that really helps. It really helps you get – we talked about those neurochemical hits of endorphins and feel-good chemicals happening. Now, for some people – exercise doesn't do it for you, but you need to find something that you actually get a chance to actually feel good throughout the day. And whether that's getting out in nature or getting some sunlight or having a really good conversation with someone you actually you really hold dear and can be fulfilled with is super important. You've got to do that stuff regularly. It's something you can't neglect. It has to be as important a part of your routine as going to work. So it's the old compound interest theory. It's the greatest mathematical theory in history. And the reason is that it works in almost every way, shape and form. So just keep doing something that makes you feel good and is healthy for you. And that provides perspective or helps you provide perspective. And that also helps you sleep at night. And if you've got some really strong principles and you make sure you're hitting them on a daily basis, then hopefully you should see that you've probably done the best that you can that day. So when your head hits a pillow, you can roll over and hopefully get a good night's sleep. But consistency is the key.
I like it, Rhett. And Rhett, that question that I'm always interested in how leaders are doing it. But there's a moment in our relationship between you and I that I remember from years ago, and it was a tough time that you were working through as CEO of the aged care facility, and I asked you a similar type of question. I said, "Are you sleeping at night? because I was worried that you were stressed and you weren't sleeping enough. And your response was similar to your answer just then. But what you said was, I'm physically tired by the end of the day because I work out and I run and I go to the gym and I do what I need to do. And by choosing to do your stressful leadership job, but then making sure you commit to your physical activity, it means you're physically tired, and therefore that was your answer at the time to help you get to sleep. And is that still the case, Rhett? Do you still find yourself physically tired, which helps you get to sleep at night?
Absolutely, yeah.
If you're physically tired, it's easy to go to sleep because you want to go to sleep. So, and it stops you from overthinking too if you're fatigued.
Yeah, got it. There's so many service-based business owners that I come across, Rhett, that hit their head hits a pillow at night, and there's replay and there's replay and there's replay of all of so many things that happen during the day and during the week that is them attempting to deal with perfectionism when all we have to shoot for is daily excellence. We have to do our very best on that particular day, and if we've done our very best on that particular day, you can be away with the perfection scale and get compare yourself to your own very best. If you've achieved your very best and you're buggered from going for a run or going to the gym or something like that, then I think that's a pretty good recipe for getting a good night's sleep, Rhett. So thank you for the very practical reminder there on how we can look after ourselves. Hey, Rhett, almost at the end, I always like to ask guests if they've got any other stuff, anything they wanted to mention or share with our audience before we wrap it up, and that's coming. But the question before that is, what do you know now that you've been a full-time coach in an elite environment for 5 going in 6 years that you wish you could have known and used in your previous career as a leader and manager?
I think it's probably something that a lot of managers and leaders would have had before, is that you don't need to take yourself too seriously. You need to be yourself. Best version of you is entirely you. So I know when I first started coaching, I took over from a guy called Lee Brown, who played 249 games of AFL football, played in the premiership for Collingwood, was a big, strong, hard man, straight out of the Mick Malthouse School, who was his longest serving coach. And he was a really hard taskmaster, big, imposing guy. In my first year, I coached a little bit like him. And then after that, I realized I got more cut through by being more me. And if there's any advice I can give people, is just be yourself, be the best version of you. And whatever it takes for your lifestyle to be the best version of you, then that's going to be you as the best manager and the best leader of people that you can be. So that would be my advice.
It's so powerful. And it's, we hear that so often, and you, I'm sure you'd heard it before you became the head coach of Gippsland Power. And yet you had to work through that difficult period to try and live up to someone else's expectations before you settled into the job as yourself and got the best job. And look, I think that's human nature, but maybe we can all find a way to learn from others' experiences rather than having to battle through those challenges ourselves. That would be a good result, Rhett, I reckon, but easier said than done for sure. Hey, Rhett, it's been a really awesome chatting with you about coaching, about your career, about your learnings. We do need to bring it to a close, but as much as I'd like to keep asking some questions, but any other stuff, Rhett, anything else on your mind that you thought through before or during this interview that you just wouldn't mind sharing to these owners of service-based businesses that are sort of very keen to keep learning and growing?
Probably just one more thing is that I think it's really important to value your own experiences. So Scott Adams, who's creator of Dilbert's, got a website called, I think it's Personal Performance, Excellence Performance. But if you Google Scott Adams, he talks about a thing called a talent stack. And a talent stack is like your own fingerprint of your experiences. And nobody's better at those experiences than you. And no one can do those things better than what you can because of all your life experiences and mistakes and successes that you've had. So imposter syndrome is something that everybody goes through, but to have the reassurance that you have got the only talent stack that looks like yours in the world, and you bring that to your leadership, then I think that is good enough at nearly any level. It's just how much you can actually cultivate that and be proud of that. If you're proud of it, then you'll bring the best version of yourself day in, day out.
Rhett, that is a fantastic way to wrap up this podcast episode. The talent stack, which is your day in, day out, year in, year out stack of experiences and skill, And wherever you are right now, it will continue to grow and improve. That is the beauty of us as human beings, as leaders. Hey, Rhett McLennan, thanks for being a guest on the Think Big, Act Small podcast.
My pleasure, Tristan. Enjoyed the chat. Cheers.